You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Blessed above all of creation, it was a rare and precious pearl. Conceived in faith and liberty, home of the brave, land of the free, it was the envy of the world. But this shining city on a hill has turned from the Creator's will and let evil take control. The reckless men who lead them want to strip away their freedom and to steal their very soul. Now it's smoke and mirrors, switch and bait, criticize, confiscate, and let the guilty walk away. In this once righteous, godly nation, in the halls of education, they forbid the child to pray. They say we need to spread the wealth. They pretend to guard the health of the feeble and the poor. While the hand they hold behind their back confuses and conceals the fact that the wolf is at the door. There's an unseen hand.
Well, we have a great show lined up today, as usual, but I think even a little bit better than usual. We have two guests on our show today, Judy Bruce and Travis Middleton, and they're going to be talking about a lawsuit that they've got against Simi Valley. It is in the process of being transferred to the appellate court. They lost the first one because of judicial activism by the court, and we'll certainly give them a chance to talk about that. Judy Bruce is a retired financial advisor. She's in retirement. She's become a conspiracy analyst and a community activist. In other words, she's sick and tired of the crap. She is currently a plaintiff in that lawsuit against the city of Simi Valley in an effort to stop 5G small cell towers from contaminating the neighborhoods. And she is also active in combating the, and this is appropriately named, HR 6666, COVID-19 testing, reaching and contacting everyone. In other words, that's what the acronym TRACE, T-R-A-C-E, ACT. And she is in Ventura County, and so she's trying to work on that project as well. And Travis Middleton is their legal representative. He is a paralegal. He's a health and legal advocate who's filed civil RICO actions against public officials as a non-attorney, although from everything I understand, he's smarter than most attorneys. Travis, I hate to say this to you, but that wouldn't be that tough to be smarter than most of the attorneys I know. Some of them aren't that sharp, but I'm glad to hear that you are. Anyway, he's one of the few legal advocates that's challenged judges and prosecutors under RICO statutes, and he is also working with Judy on this case against Simi Valley and also against the HR 666 or 6666. He's got 20 years of experience in the fight against Senate Bill 277 to help all parents in the state of California take back their rights. So he's been active in a lot of great things. And I want to welcome both of you to the program. We'll start out, maybe Judy, if you would give a little background on how you got involved in this lawsuit against Simi Valley, and then we'll let Travis explain just exactly how you've done that. Judy, you need to unmute. There we go. Okay.
Well, I first became involved in fighting 5G when I found out there's our methods to do that. I read an article that Marin County was successful in getting some restrictive ordinances. But then a few months later, I met Travis, and he gave a great example. Analogy. He said, you know, you got to look at all this, what's going on with people taking action against 5G, like a tree. And at the bottom of the tree, you have a root. And at the root is this federal regulation. The FCC 813, which the city council members are constantly saying their hands are tied whenever we would go to city council meetings. And that they couldn't do anything and had no choice. And so when I met Travis, he said, you know, the root of this tree, if you take out that root, forget about the ordinances, because even if you have a restrictive ordinance, they can come back and change it, you know, anytime. And so you got to pull out the root, which is the FCC, the what they're saying is the law, which is nothing but a regulation. So I was very, very impressed with Travis, and I thought, wow, this guy, you know, he's on top of it. And so he agreed to help us and did a lot of research, and he found out that for sure this was not positive, what's called positive law. And so we decided to have him help us, and we paid him to do some research, and he found a way to become a plaintiff, even though he is not a resident of Simi Valley. And that was very helpful. So that's kind of an introduction, and Travis could really, you know, fill in how we did it and where we are.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for the introduction. Travis, I look forward to hearing how you've approached this lawsuit, because I mentioned to Judy the other day that I have a friend by the name, a friend in the Midwest, I won't mention his name right now, but anyway, he may be on with you at some point, so I don't want to screw that up. But anyway, he has found that so many of the so-called laws are nothing more than rules, and they have nothing to do with actual law. And that, I believe, that's kind of the basis of what you do, is prove that there is really nothing in law that they are doing. Am I correct with that?
Partly, yes, Dan. You're partly correct with that. There are some rules that are different than others. Some laws are more impactful than others, given your perspective and your awareness of how to respond to the bureaucrat who's trying to impose it upon you. But let me take a moment and make a few corrections in terms of the introduction. First, our case in Simi Valley has not been dismissed yet. It has not gone to the appellate review court process yet. We are in a holding pattern due to COVID-19. And at this time, the court is entertaining whatever the opposing counsel's arguments are above ours. And my advice to everybody is let's wait and see what he does. And I have a remedy for that. But I suspect he's going to try to figure out a way to dismiss this case because he doesn't like the argument we're making. And number two, in terms of introduction, I've been working with parents and a lot of activists in California against SB 277. It has not been a 20-year trek for that. It's been about 5 to 6 years for that. But I do have 27 years of constitutional training behind me and about 16 years of court process behind me, from state court to federal court and appellate courts, in terms of filing my own actions and helping other people file their own actions, giving them guidance on how to move a case through a corrupt judiciary in spite of the corruptness that you find. So that's what I bring to the table. And the other thing about our lawsuit is the judge seems to be trying to get us to go into the narrative that he wants us to, which is the voting booth. Now, if I may, the angle that we're approaching is twofold. One, I explained to Judy and her group, and when it came to me. I was very busy. I didn't want to get involved with the 5G issue at that time. I was very doing online like 5 years. So I said to them, if someone's going to try to mandate you do something, your first obligation is to have them quote you the law or statute that mandates it, so you can go look it up and see, one, if it exists, and two, if it applies to you. When my mentors told me that 20-something years ago, and I started doing the research behind these so-called laws and statutes and regulations, I was amazed at how many didn't exist. I was amazed at which ones didn't apply to me and how they were just defrauding the public. So that led me down the pike of a greater understanding about our so-called world of law and order. Here you have, I was told by Judy that the city council member were making the statement that under regulatory order by the FCC 18-133, our hands are tied. There's nothing we can do. They're going to force us upon us whether we not. If we apply lawsuits, 18 hours, regulations. Turns out Title 47 is not positive law. That's why I find what's called the 1996 Telecommunications Act, by which this 18-133 regulatory order is seated. It's administrative law where the FCC controls the telecom industry and how they sell internet, phone, and cable services throughout America. It's got nothing to do with the township or citizens anywhere in America. So the city council members are lying to the public about, one, the nature of this ruling, and two, how it impacts the public. So that being said, our lawsuit is based upon a very strong California premise. And I saw this about 7 years ago doing research. There's a provision under California's Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 3A, and it reads, the people have the right to instruct their representatives. And my little fingers and brain were just tingling all over trying to find the time to go investigate and research it to see if it meant what I thought it meant. Because when the citizens realize where their true power is, here we have a mechanism in California that empowers the citizens to do one thing. I think it's very impactful. We have the right to instruct, not suggest, not ask, to instruct our representatives. Now, in my understanding, you can instruct them a number of ways. You can do a petition. You can send them a letter. But the most effective way is through a court process called a mandamus. And all you're asking for the court to do is to mandate that a public official do that which is lawful for the good of the public as per their oath of office dictates. So I finished the research up on that provision a couple of years ago, found some case law, and my instincts were correct. We have that right as public, as people of California, to instruct our representatives, and we need to teach every other person in California just how to do that. So I discovered a way in my research before I filed this mandamus that I too could have standing to be a party plaintiff in this matter, even though I was not a resident of Simi Valley. And the rule is, and I'll read it to you, and I put this right in the opening brief on the front page so that the judge who's reading the pleading and the opposing counsel, whoever he or she may be, can know that I'm not just blowing smoke, okay? I'm giving them California Supreme Court case law that states why I could have standing and on what premises. Well, as fate would have it, neither of these guys read the brief, or they read it and dismissed the issue from the California Supreme Court. And here is the rule as the Supreme Court gives it to us. And I'll read it to you from the brief. Okay, it's about standing issue. Who has the right to stand in front of the judge to ask to do this? And it says petitioners have a standing petition to this court by mandamus as a public right. First, that must be a public right at stake, with the objective of procuring the enforcement of a public duty owed to the petitioners by defendants and the respondents. That's Green versus Oblido, 29 Cal 3rd, 126, 144, a 1981 case. And I write in the brief, respondents or the defendants have a ministerial non-discretionary duty to abide by their oath of office and follow the law and are breaking it. Respondents are therefore liable in their official capacities for injuries caused by their failure to discharge these duties. And there are no plain, speedy, and adequate alternative remedies at law except this mandamus. So the language of it is, according to the case law, one must have, the target must have a public obligation or public duty. And the citizens must be willing to enforce that public duty somehow. That's the criteria. So that's the only standing issue you have. So anybody in California can do this in any county in California, according to the California Supreme Court, if it's by mandamus, in this style of mandamus. And the judge is trying to get us around this argument, and he's also trying to get me off the case for some reason. So that's where it is right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that we've seen that happen too many times, and that is that, they can't use the law in a proper way, so they, through activism, they do it their way. Judy, talk a little bit about how the 5G issue came up and how I know you're trying to approach this in a non-health issue way. You're trying to follow the law, as Travis has outlined here. But talk a little bit about what's going on with 5G in Simi Valley.
Well, they're using, unfortunately, Simi Valley, unlike other cities, I believe they're using the lockdown for 24/7 rollout of 5G and considering it essential. We wrote a letter to our city and we asked them that to please do not accept any applications during this lockdown. And so they wrote us back and they said that they would not accept any applications for a 90-day period. And this was like a month and a half ago. So I have to, accept that. But they are rolling them out. I do have people saying that they see them, and I don't know when they're going to remotely. They can be remotely turned on. And so that's quite disturbing, and especially when they turn on to the 60 gigahertz, which is going to be pretty much devastating. I think I sent you that visual on that. So right now, now that the lockdown is just very recently over, this is probably going to continue. But our lawsuit, fortunately, in it, states that if anything is constructed, they'll have to remove it. So we're not only preventing, we are going to be removing. That's assuming we win. So, Travis feels that, we haven't been dismissed, but our gut feeling is that it probably will go to appellate. And that's why I made that comment. We're pretty much, But now that this lockdown is over, we're waiting for the opposing counsel to submit their demur. So they wrote us actually right when the lockdown happened. They wrote us a letter and said that they have to hold off. So we should be getting that now, in a week or two. So that's kind of where we are right now. We should be getting that. And I think Travis said that the judge will make a decision whether he's going to give us a hearing or not. So we just have to wait for that notice.
Well, there's been a wholesale rush into 5G saying, well, we're going to lose the technology war. Well, the fact is the communist Chinese have got most of the patents, most of the rights to the 5G stuff. And even though it was developed by our military as a crowd control and as part of a weapon system, the Chinese grabbed that through our dear friend, ex-president Bill Clinton, who literally sold the United States down the river for campaign contributions for him and Al Gore. But anyway, the technology that the Chinese have been using, a lot of it came as a result of technology transfers during the Clinton administration and some in the early Bush years. So our so-called leaders have been doing a very, very poor job of keeping, let's say, our technology in this country. What is the primary concern with 5G, and maybe talk about why your group is fighting so hard to try to stop this so that at least there's enough research to make make sure that if we are using it, it is safe, that you know, you have the proof for that.
Well,
go ahead.
One thing is the way they're implemented it with these towers, studies show that it could be just as effective without going 5G with underground cable, access to cable, you know, fiber optics. They don't need to do it this way, but they see an income stream, number one. And so they want to do it that way. Now, there may be other reasons why they're choosing this modality other than what's the obvious. The government is always testing new intrusions into our lives by clandestine ways, even sometimes without our knowledge or cooperation. The other aspect of it is Title 47 and the 5 FCC regulatory order isn't law of the country. And when you have a case like, or a situation where you have this and this matter, the 1996 Telecommunications Act has been pushed upon the townships. All these attorneys aren't doing the research about the veracity of this so-called rule. When you have a situation where you have a what's called a prima facie law or prima facie statute, and there's two kinds to consider. One is prima facie, one is what's called de jure law that's been impaneled or set up by a legislative body. Here, we have 51 United States codes. And when you look at the council's website for the Attorney General's office, it indicates which one of these codes have been put into positive law or de jure law that you have to follow. Title 47 has not been put into positive law. So in the absence of that, you have to look to what's now called a regulation of enforcement, enforced and published the Federal Register, that empowers some federal agency to act in some way against the public. And all you really have is the FCC mandating the telecom companies who are selling cable, internet, and phone services that they adhere to the administrative process about whom gets the right signals, hijacking of signals, who can sell what territories, and how they get to sell in territories if they're permitted. None of this regulatory stuff has anything to do with any township, any citizen, and the city council members and the attorneys are not telling the public of the true status of this so-called regulatory order. On the other side of the coin, you have all this litigation going up in the Ninth Circuit administrative process where these legal cities are wasting all these hundreds of thousands of dollars on attorney's fees in a venue where they have absolutely no standing to be. It's for the telecom companies and the FCC to work out their disputes between who's hijacked the signal, who gets to get awarded what license, and how come up against what's called the anti-commandeering doctrine if they try to force this upon the citizenry and any township in America. But again, if the city council attorneys do not know about the anti-commandeering doctrine, how it impacts and affects their jurisdiction, they are going to waive their out of ignorance or corruption, and then you'll have these towers everywhere. It's been shown to be unsafe by the military studies and other studies around the world. And so we're going to have more citizens rise up and, you know, crowd City Hall and demand that they abort this process or use an alternative process that doesn't involve these kind of towers and this kind of technology. So that's the objective.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're quite right about the fiber optic. That's something that has been available and doesn't require the surveillance and the satellites and all the rest as much. Fiber optic is a clean way to do it if you're only concerned about communication speed.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is we think that this is all about surveillance society. Obviously, that's yes. all part of this plan. Judy, I'd love to hear your comments on that, too.
Yes. Well, as far as the safety testing, the independent researchers are saying that it was rolled out, obviously, without testing, because had it been tested, they would have to publish it. And the 5G would never have been allowed had it been published. So we know that the telecoms are owned by I call it the cult, which includes the satellites. And that's going to be very crucial for total human control by AI. And people are just clueless. They're not looking at who is making the money on this. And obviously the people who have the money have the ability to manipulate people. And they can do their mass cull, which we unfortunately know that's what they want to do. It's a whole depopulation agenda that they have. So I think that's, pretty much what their goal is. And I assume at some point we want to make the 5G connection. I don't know when you want to get into that to what's going on right now. Did you want to get into that now, the 5G connection, or you want to wait on that?
We can do that, Judy. I just kind of wanted to set the groundwork of why you got involved, why Travis got involved, the issues that you see here as far as the total safety issues. I'm sure that both of you realize that the Communist Chinese way communications is the like the overlord, the godfather of 5G, and it disturbs me a great deal to understand that we're at the mercy of communist Chinese companies who control most of the patents on a lot of this stuff. So that's my concern. Maybe set a little of your background too.
Well, the way I feel about that, from what I've been reading and hearing, is that China is part of the plan of the globalists, and they've chose China to be the model. They are the model, and if you see what's going on right now with this HR6666, it's basically following exactly what they're doing. And what's ironic is that, the mainstream media was saying that, communist China, they're bad, and these lockdowns are bad, and all this social crediting is bad. And look, we're doing the same thing. So they are the model. We are becoming Marxist communism. We are. So no, I think the China thing is just all part of the plan. I think it's part of the theater. That's my opinion on that. So.
Well, I agree. I agree. Travis, I know that you've been following this because Google has been one of the companies who has done much of the research and put into play the software that the Chinese are using right now in their social credit system. Anyway, I'd like to hear your point of view on this as well.
Well, Dan, I don't have enough information to either deny or confirm that fact of what Judy just stated. I haven't looked that far into the looking glass of China's involvement with the 5G issue. It's a little outside my purview at the moment.
Okay. Well, that's a good, honest answer. And I know as a legal scholar, you've got to be very careful to make sure that what you give our listeners is fact and not not supposition. So I appreciate that. Well, let's talk. And Thumper, you've got that David Icke 5G picture. If you wouldn't mind putting that up on air, I think we can talk a little bit about some of the lawsuit and how you're following that. And go ahead and put that up. I also wanted to talk about the lawsuit in the way that it's going and how the standing issue was a big deal because they were trying to make sure that Travis, that you couldn't be there to file these claims. And so I know they've tried to make that part of the way of excluding you in that. So let's talk about how you see this going forward, because even though it hasn't gone to appeal yet, I misunderstood that. I think we all recognize that administrative judges have done an awful lot of legislating from the bench, and everybody in the power grid seems to want this 5G. So it's a good likelihood that you're going to face those kind of opposition. So maybe talk a little bit about moving this case forward.
Okay. Well, I've got a plan for this judge, whether he knows it or not. I was on a podcast 2 months ago before the shutdown. And for about 20 years, I've seen a technique or heard of a technique where some patriots have tried to rein a judge in and use the oath of office as a, you know, a tacit agreement contract, if you will. They want to honor their oath. Well, I heard of a woman up on the East Coast who did this several times and actually reined this judge in. You know, and she's not running for office on the East Coast. So I had one of the participants send me the language of what they used. So it wasn't that complicated. I added some other things to it myself. And I plan on using this same technique with this judge as soon as this case reconvenes again. But I'm going to put in my tacit agreement that should he come on the bench and bangs his gavel and open the session up for hearing, he's agreeing to the tacit agreement. He's agreeing to waive of immunity, and I'm going to wrap a racketeering case around his neck for obstructing justice.
So this this lady from the East Coast that did this, is this the same judge?
No, different judge, different circumstance.
Different judge, okay, okay.
Yes, I'm one of the few people that you'll hear that you know how to sue a judge, you know, and do it well, of being ruining my office and that sort of thing. So I've sued judges before, and two of the judges that I've sued, they lost their benches. They got demoted. One retired because of me. So there are ways to rein a judge in if you do it the right way with the right gun. They don't like being sued under RICO. Okay. Now I know that I won't get any money out of the judge, but I can inflame them and set them on fire with a racketeering case around their neck. So I will put that language in my next document so that he understands clearly where I'm coming from when he starts to want to do the wrong things and run sideways on this case and try and challenge my issue of standing again. So that's my plan. Now, in the moment, I told Judy and the other participants, it may not save the day in the moment, but it'll give me good evidence and good grounds to go after him in a supplemental proceeding on the racketeering, given what he tries to do at the next proceeding. So I'm going to try and discourage him from doing the wrong things. I'm going to try and discourage him from trying to overcome the rule of law and be a judicial activist from the bench.
Well, I'm going to get you in touch with somebody who's done that in the past too, that may be helpful to you, because I've they've had some luck with that. And I know you have too. And good minds need to be working together, because we've sure got a lot of corrupt, evil people out there in the judicial system. And frankly, in the whole legal system.
Mm-hmm.
So, Judy, this is video or that piece that you sent me from David Icke. Maybe talk a little bit about this.
Okay. This is what happens when they are going to turn on remotely 5G to 60 gigahertz. There was that visual, they bring that down, showing that spikes at 60 and then and goes down again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there it is. So at that level, what happens is that the oxygen is taken out of the blood, and they can't, it's like suffocating. And people will basically, drop over. It has the effect of like you're in a cabin pressure at 30,000 feet, or you're at Mount Everest. And this is what will happen at that power. And we're very, very concerned about this. This is a very dangerous thing. And what the type of symptoms that at that level of power, it's going to have respiratory systems. It's going to appear very much flu-like. And so what we're fearing is that they're going to call that obviously a virus. So that's why
COVID,
they do
COVID-19. COVID-19, Judy, that's the first thing that comes to mind.
I hate using that word because there is no COVID-19. In fact, mm-hmm. COVID stands for, what I've heard, is Certificate of Vaccination ID. So, they've never isolated it or purified it. So, but anyway, yeah, but they'll call it COVID or they'll make up a new name. So that's what they do. So, mm-hmm. but that's what that...
That's one of the symptoms that they attach to. They call it also CCP virus. This is one of the symptoms, is the fact that people can't breathe. They literally cannot breathe anymore, and they drop over dead. So
that's right. That's right. And you have to wonder why. I'm hearing about these morgues that are being built the size of football fields. You know, why? Why are, you know, the numbers aren't high for this COVID. So what do they know? You know, very disturbing why they're building all these morgues. Speaking of David Icke, he's done some great videos, and I'm a real note taker. When I hear some good stuff, I write it down. So I do have some notes of David's, and I think that one of the things he brought up is that there's a great book by Arthur Furstenberg. I call it Invisible Rainbow, and the effect of health. Every time we have a global epidemic, it seems to coincide with some kind of a preceded by technology that involves EMFs. And that's what the Spanish flu was all about. That came out of the military. That was not a flu. It's when they came out with these radar and radio waves. And so that's what we have to deal with. And also the he was saying that the 5G, our bodies are electrical. And when our electric system is in balance, we're healthy. But when our electrical organism is out of balance, we get diseased. And so we're constantly being bombarded by these EMFs. And So it's running up the number of, quote, viruses. I think people may have seen that video that went viral, that ICU doctor in New York, who said that he was getting these patients and he had these symptoms that he's never seen before. And again, he gave that analogy of the 30,000 feet cabin pressure and Mount Everest. And he said, and they told me to treat him with ventilators. No, you don't treat him with ventilators. They need oxygen, you know? And Could so, he? Yeah.
This is Thumper. I have a question for you.
Yes.
Do you have any information on when this virus supposedly broke out in China? There was a significant number of people that just kind of disappeared off the grid there. And we were able to identify that by the number of cell phone signals that suddenly were not available anymore. Now, in China, we know that they are they require that everybody have a cell phone and, you know, 5G, courtesy of Huawei and a few of the other large electronics manufacturers are the ones that are pushing this 5G. And they're also the ones that were supplying a lot of the infrastructure that's been installed here in the United States. And so as a result, you know, we had what appeared to be millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people in China that died as a result of the so-called virus. But it was at this, could that have been at the same time that they energized their 5G or 6G, excuse me.
Right.
5G.
Well, and Thumper, yeah. You know, that they tied that right back to that, that lab, that was, right near Wuhan. And, that lab had gone black, for a period of about 2 or 3 weeks, before the so-called expansion of the virus. Mm-hmm. And they felt like the, and I've read several articles about this, that they actually had a, you know, they had a mishap at the lab that allowed this virus to get out. So I don't know if it's absolutely true or not, but there's been several sources that have reported on that, and they did the same thing. They tracked it back that the cell service was completely dead in that area for a matter of about 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really comfortable with the black thing. David gets sick, so they need to be able to manipulate it. And I understand that Wuhan was the first city to install 5G, and that it takes about 6 months for people to get the build up the sickness. So that kind of falls right in line with the 6 months, you know, as to when it was installed versus when the this quote outbreak came about. So another thing David said is that the 5G does poison our cells, and it releases what's called exosomes, which is really just our immune response. And so, and what they're calling this virus is really nothing but these exosomes, which is our immune. It's a genetic sequence, and they decided to diagnose by symptoms. And so that's so that anybody who is near EMF that has these poisons in them that generates these exosomes that mirror what a virus looks like under a microscope, they're going to be tested positive. So, you know, and as these 5G is rolled out more rapidly, anybody they test, you know, it's going to be, well, the number is like about 80% people will test positive. Because we're going to eventually be bombarded with these EMFs. So that's, and then of course, while in lockdown, Musk got permission for 1 million ground antennas. And these EMFs are going to connect with the satellites, and it's going to create this smart grid. And so this surveillance by satellites is going to create a sub-reality. And at that point, Agenda 2030 is going to be implemented. So that's kind of where we're going. anyway, so yeah.
Judy?
Yeah. And they're putting these 5Gs. Yeah.
I'm sorry, if I could ask you another question.
Sure.
Are you familiar or heard of Morgellons disease?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Are you familiar with how it affects the body as well? What I've seen, there's a very distinct correlation between the Morgellons and this, what is being described in this David Icke diagram here, where it attacks the oxygen and the iron in the blood. And the two are very, very similar. And it basically, it messes with the ability for the blood to carry oxygen to the rest of the body. And when that happens, you just have a cascading snowball effect on the health of the individual.
Right, right, yes, right. The blood's hemoglobin cannot absorb the vibrating oxygen. And so when it's exposed to the 60 gigahertz for a long period of time, they suffer that altitude type of asphyxiation, and they're not able to absorb the oxygen at all. So I can kill at a distance. At a molecular level, these frequencies affect the orbit of electrons that affect the ability of blood hemoglobin to bind with the oxygen. So if the blood cannot hold the oxygen, the result is death by suffocation. So in short, the 5G technology has a potential of being used as a weapon to quickly weaken, disable, or destroy individuals or entire populations. So that's a little information.
We have hosts on Patriot Soapbox here who dig very, very deep into this stuff. And we have actually proven exactly what you're saying. There's a ton of information out there for people to use. And I've done a lot of research on it. Not as much as some other folks, but I've done my own research on the Morgellons. And then when I saw this, I saw just an incredible similarity. And it seems to be they have an agenda here to make it look as natural as possible, but it is a concerted effort. I am absolutely convinced, mm-hmm. from what I've seen and what I've researched, that this is exactly, you know, their plan.
This is calling the herd, Thumper.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the fact is that under UN Agenda 21 and 2030, they make no bones about it that the world's population needs to be reduced to fewer than a billion people, which is a 93% to 95% reduction in population.
Yes. Are you familiar with the Deagle Report?
Deagle Report? I'm not.
The Deagle Report.
No.
Let me see if I can. Is it on the internet? I'll do a search for it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes, deagle.com. And this organization is AGLE. And they are connected to a laundry list of government organizations, like CIA, Department of Defense, DARPA, I mean, on and on and on and on. So they're not some just schlock outfit. And there is a chart that shows it was done in 2015, and that was probably one of the visuals I should have sent you. I didn't think about it. That shows the population in 2015 for the U.S. was something like 349 million, and then they projected for 2025, and it's like 69 million. Here I've got, and I just pulled it up. I can get the exact numbers. Okay, so
is this the one that's I've got a search here. I'm sorry, I got a search here. It says James Deagle versus Chris Eubank Jr. is one, and then I've got another one here that says let's see, David Bennett is, then I've got a fight report, Deagle versus Eubank.
Now I don't know what did this chart, but it shows population 316 million for 2015. 2013, get that, okay. And then for 2025, it's down to 69 million. That's a projection. I mean, that is really scary. But I can send this.
If you want to put, if you'd like to put the link to that in the chat there in the Zoom, if you open up your chat window in Zoom.
I don't know how to. Yeah, I don't know how to do that. I've never done that before.
If you open up the chat window, you can actually type in that link, and I'll pull it up and put it on screen for everyone.
Oh, let's see if it's got the link on this. I don't see I took a picture of the chart, and so it doesn't have the picture doesn't have the statement. So I can't do that. I don't have it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I've seen that chart before. I didn't realize that was the name of it, but I have seen that before. A drastic reduction in the population, and they really don't describe exactly how they came to that conclusion. You know, fascinating. Travis, I want to keep you involved in this conversation because you've got an important part in this. Maybe let's go ahead and gravitate into HR 6666 and how that whole thing is evolving and maybe what you see happening with that.
Okay. Well, from what I read the bill. It's a very short bill from the ones I'm used to reading. And at this point, it's a proposed bill and vote on it, a dead piece of bill, a dead legislation. So we live in a Republican form of government where it takes the cooperation of both the houses to get together and decide whether they're going to push this bill into law. President has to sign it and okay it. Then it becomes something we have to take a look at. And then he has to pass what's called constitutional muster. Before they use it against populists. That's an order if you wanted to. No, they're unconstitutional. They're going to come up against the anti-commandeering doctrine like all the rest of them did. You know, so yeah, I hear that this new track and trace program is coming down the pike. But there's ways to circumvent it from a local level to a federal level. I mean, all I would have to do is when my county health department official comes to my door and wants to talk to me, first of all, they're not getting in. Okay? They're not getting in. And if they try to come in by force, they're gonna meet force back. I'm not going to play that game about waiving my rights under the Fourth Amendment without having due process. I have a Second Amendment right to enforce my other rights, and I will exercise that right too. So the other option that I would be looking at would be I'll take him to task and drag him into district court and have a federal judge say, you know, this so-called bill is not the law of the land. The Supremacy Clause is our U.S. Constitution. So when you look at Marbury versus Madison, anything contradicting that Constitution is void. Period. No matter how you twist it. So a number of us don't have the time and expertise to do what I do in terms of filing on their own law and process. I get that. But from a local level, just don't let them in on your property. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So well, at this point, I'm not worried about it.
The thing that is coming out with all this stuff that's happening right now, this contact tracing, all these things that they're talking about, create permanent identification for every human being on Earth, all the things that they're talking about doing, all this works together so well. If in fact we just stop and let them do it. That's why it's so important that everybody start acting we have some freedoms here, because we won't if we don't continue to try to protect them.
Yes, and I echo that concern. And I've told people recently that communities are going to have to band together and get with the militias, have community watch groups, stand up in arms and protect each other and come together collectively to push back against these tyrannical, treasonous acts by our government officials. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you see a little white van down the street from your neighbor's house, they're going to extract someone because of a COVID-19 track and trace program. You need to have those people go out there and run them off, club them with clubs, you know, get mm-hmm. run them out of town so they get the hint. Now, if we just stand down and be passive and ask them to give us our rights, well, we see where that's getting us. Nowhere.
Right.
So I look at it from the perspective, I'm not advocating violence. They're doing the violence. They're proposing to do violence to us. We have a natural inalienable right to protect our lives from imminent danger, from natural law. You have the right of self-preservation. And that right supersedes the Constitution. So Justice Blackstone wrote about that years ago, about your right of self-preservation. And you can use even moral force to preserve your right, your life, and the life of your loved ones. But the condition is, make sure that your life is in danger, such that you use that kind of force. Mm-hmm. But you have that right to use force, that kind of force, to not die from any cause, be it a neighbor or the government. Mm-hmm. Now, attorneys won't talk about this. Perhaps they haven't learned about common law and inalienable rights and haven't read Blackstone's commentaries, and they won't get this. I heard a DA in Los Angeles about 5 years ago made a statement about a police shooting where a citizen killed a police officer because the police officer was trying to intrude in their property and didn't have a warrant, didn't announce himself, and they fought back and killed this guy. Police officers, the DA basically stated that they would go after any police officer that killed someone without, you know, imminent danger being to himself. And that citizens have a right to use force to protect their life. I was shocked to hear a DA do this.
But sounds like a pretty good DA.
Well, I don't know. Could have been a political statement, but he was correct, mm-hmm. you know, in what he said. But I don't rely on his words to understand that premise either. It's interesting and nice to know that someone inside the government understands that and speaks about it publicly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my take on the whole track and trace program is they're going to do just what we allow them to do. And if we don't get a little tougher in our stance and give a little more, you know, I think force and pushback. Because this test, they want to see what we're in the talk trace program. I won't mention any names, but you know, I give the admonition to the government and their officials in their brown boots walking around at ground zero. They're not the only ones that has guns. They're not the only ones that have military training. They're not mm-hmm. the only ones that know how to do combat at close and far range, and they're not the only ones that have sniper rifles. Also have these tactics, and if they push us far enough, we're willing to use those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, and that's our unalienable right is a right to self-protection, self-preservation. And that's a God-given right. That does not come from government. And that's just plain old common sense. That's right out of the Bible. And it is just plain old common sense. If you can't protect your own life, why are you here? You know, and the rights of your family, the lives and freedoms of your families. That's just the way it works.
Yeah, but you know, I also look at it from the perspective, you know, 20 years ago when I got into learning about constitutional law and personal liberties, I had associates and friends asking me, Travis, why are you wasting all your time learning all this stuff? Well, my response was, because I see a trend of government overreach and intrusion in my personal and private life to such a degree that I don't want to tolerate it anymore. And I want to know just where I can and can't step and on what grounds. so I can put them in check if I need to. In case I need to be able to know this stuff, I know that I can't depend upon attorneys all the time to save me from government abuse and overreach. Mm-hmm. So I want to become confident in my own right to know how to, this stuff is coming down the pike so fast, it's almost hard to keep track of what's happening when it goes down. My inbox and my email is dumped up by 4.5 times of people contacting me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I have to tell you, Travis, you know, our constitutional Republican form of government, and that's small R Republican, not large R, is based on the concept of the rights of the individual and the fact that we cannot have freedom unless we have the rights to protect the minority, to protect the person whose rights the individual has those rights. And frankly, I hear all this crap about democracy, which, you know, is mob rule. And you and I both know that if we don't have the right to protect ourselves and our families individually, then we have no rights at all.
You're correct. And my observation is, I would say 90% of the Americans don't know this about the basic fundamental liberties. I read a quote from Justice Blackstone 20-something years ago when I first got into this. And here's the quote. Now, again, Travis didn't say this, Justice Blackstone did. He said 95% of all attorneys in America are incompetent.
Amen. Now,
if that's true, and I suppose he should know, at that time, whenever he wrote it, if that's true, what attorneys that may know what they're doing, unless he or she's a Johnny Cochran or Chris Ann Hall, they're going to be clueless to a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So okay. that struck me as very horrific for my own personal liability. I got to get on the ball here and learn what I don't know about our Constitution and how it's applied in my daily circumstances. So that was my objective in learning this stuff and how to apply it for my own personal sake. You know, and it is work, but it's worth it. Mm-hmm. But most Americans don't know what you just said about your inalienable rights and your rights of self-preservation. You ask any politician to tell you, respond, what are the five provisions of the First Amendment? And see what they say. Mm-hmm. You would be amazed. Mm-hmm. They don't think about that stuff. Okay?
Most of them have absolutely no constitutional law as part of their training. If they do, it's such a quick lesson during their 3-year law school that they don't really learn anything about it anyway.
Very little, if at all. Or they get out to the public and either forget or get corrupted from money or allegiance to corporations or whatever. Whatever forces that they encounter once they get in the office. Oh, there's a movie that you guys will get a good kick out of. It's an old movie from 1988, 89, 92, something like that. It's by Eddie Murphy and it's called Distinguished Gentleman. And if you haven't heard of it or watched it, it's quite hilarious. He does a good job of this, but he ends up going to Congress to become a representative. Because he thinks the biggest con there is. He gets, you know, $100,000 a year for staffing. Every person in Congress who's been you know, sought after by these agents from the corporations to give them money to create bills that enhances their business. So the public isn't involved in that process. They don't know what's going on behind their backs. And they wonder what happened when the politician won't respond to them. They have this idea, that, oh, we're his constituents. I wish people would stop saying that. You're not a politician's constituents. You're not one of those agents that work for Dow Chemicals or Bill Gates Foundation. They don't really care. And I said this to someone in a podcast many years ago. I said, I haven't voted in 37 years. When I realized the scam that it was, I stopped registering to vote. You know, you can't do that. Black people went to war and fought and died over voting rights. Yeah, they got scammed back then. I'm sorry, but they got scammed again. So I made this proclamation to the interviewer. As it is based on my legal knowledge now, that unless and until a politician send me a what's called a power of attorney form for me to sign, giving them the legal authority to speak on my behalf, carry my vote and voice in domestic and foreign affairs, they owe me nothing. They owe me nothing. Hmm. You have no connection to a politician whatsoever other than their word. And now I have case law to prove it. It was against President Obama. So people got together. They're going to sue him for his derelict of office. The district court made a ruling among several things. And here's one of them. Just because you voted and because you're a military man or, and there were several litigants, or you're a citizen of America, he owes you nothing as a duty in his office. I was like, wow, finally, I have case law to prove my point from 37 years ago. So when I tell people your vote doesn't matter, they don't get it. I'm anti-patriotic to them, but they don't understand our caste system. Mm-hmm. And yes, I agree. People fought for their idea to vote. Women went through all their struggles in the 20s learned to be able to vote. I get that. It does not give the politician one iota connection to you. He owes his connection to the people who pay his funding for his campaign. Realize that, wake up and understand it, and the better off you're going to be. It's a scam.
Well, I hate to say it, but there's a lot of people that agree with that because it has changed so much. It's changed because we don't care enough as a people. And I'm talking as a people. We are so willing to accept the fact that we can do nothing for years after year, and then all of a sudden go out and vote, and that's going to make all the difference in the world.
Part of that problem is in America, we're so dumbed down and miseducated on purpose by our system government from high school on up. Mm-hmm. Our educational process is so orchestrated by the powers that be. They don't want you to learn to be a critical thinker. That's dangerous to them. They want you to be subservient to the government because it's easier to control you that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I was reading a book by William Cooper called Behold the Pale Horse.
Oh, yeah.
And in this book, he talks about silent weapons of quiet wars. And what he meant by that was the government is using social programming and what's called environmental problems, disasters, and disease to manipulate the public into a certain mindset.
Travis?
Yes.
I might ask, do you know who wrote Silent Weapons?
I don't know. I thought Bill Cooper was the writer, author of it.
No, actually, the gentleman that wrote that.
No.
The gentleman that actually wrote that, his name is Harvard Van Dyke. And he lives just north of me. And we have had the gentleman on the channel with one of our hosts here the past few weeks. And Harvard is an amazing individual. And if you want to go back, you can go to our archive site. Uh-huh. And he will give you he's done, 3-hour shows. And he's like 86 years old. He's been through hell.
Yeah.
But he's the gentleman that wrote Silent Weapons for Silent Wars.
Oh, that, yes.
And you need to go look at our archive channel and pull up the Crossing the Matrix show with mm-hmm. Chris. And Harvard Van Dyke is the gentleman that wrote that book. And he's been anxious for years to tell his story about how that came to be. And
I know that name, by the way, Harvard Van Dyke. I've known that name for 25 years.
Yeah. No, he is, he loves our channel. He has not been able to tell his story for years. Very good. He's been in jail. He's been maligned. And he lives just north of me. As a matter of fact, I was in that town yesterday. Amazing gentleman. And, yeah. And he will tell you a lot.
Wow.
I'm sure.
Information.
You know, he's a dangerous man because of what he knows. And that's why.
And he admits it.
Yeah. I had heard that document was leaked accidentally. It was found in a copier, a surplus copier at Boeing, from an ex-employee that bought it. But I don't know if that was true or not. But that's what I read parts of it. And what's interesting is they decided to shoot situations instead of weapons. And that's how they're doing their social engineering. I'd like to just repeat a very famous quote from Bill Casey, director of the CIA, 1981 staff meeting. Deborah Tavares brings this up a lot. She says, when he said, I don't think he knew he was being recorded at the time. He said, "We will know that our disinformation campaign is working when everything the American people believe is false." And I think that's pretty true. Yeah,
that is profound. That's absolutely profound.
By the way, Dan.
Go ahead, Thumper. What?
I was just going to let you know we've had a couple of Q-posts come in since the show started.
Okay, we'll find a spot to put those in. Go ahead. Let's see what you've got, folks. I want you to be thinking about. I know that Travis, you're involved with a group called Vax Freedom. That's your group, and I want to start talking about the vaccine program. So be thinking about that. Thumper, go ahead and put up that Q post, and then we'll get back to that.
All right, we'll get it loaded in. I'll get it up on the share. Are Judy and Travis, are you familiar with the Q posts at all?
No, first time hearing the term.
Okay. Yeah, I am. I'm not. I question it. Let me put it this way.
Well, if you question it, you need to go listen to the press secretary's her press conference just last Friday, because she basically put on the slides there and told all the reporters that were there to dive into the questions. And the questions she had up on the screens were directly from a Q post.
Oh, I get what you mean now, Thumper. Okay. You're talking about QAnon?
Yeah, QAnon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been aware of him and what he's doing for the last couple of years. Okay. I have not yet had the time to follow what he's doing, though.
Now, we follow it very, very closely here on Patriot Soapbox. Okay, we've got right at the top of the show, post 4315 came in, and it is this link. Obama to meet world leaders in India and China weeks after Trump's visit. Okay, now this is an article that came out Tuesday, November 28th on 2017. So that's what it's referencing here. And Q is talking about the shadow Obama presidency that was set up after the election in November. Okay. And let's go back to the Q post here. And it says the shadow presidency, Q. And then the post that just came in goes to a Twitter post here. And it goes directly to QAnon. Modeling shows coronavirus pandemic in U.S. could be over by November. And here's the here's what they're showing in the graph here.
I'm always amazed, Thumper, with computer modeling. That term irks me. I mean,
are you referring to garbage in, garbage out?
Yeah, exactly. All I can think of is all these nincompoops and their global warming theories and all the other garbage that we've been hearing about for the last umpteen years that came out of computer models.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So let's go back and we'll finish up this Q post real quick. Fear not, all will be well right after the election. Is this about the virus or the election? Question mark. Sign Q. Right. So that takes us up, gets us up to date since the top of the show here. And
okay,
turn it over to you, Dan.
Yeah, let's get Judy and Travis back in talking about the vaccine programs, because I know that's something that's near and dear to both of you, and it really ties in directly to the 5G and a lot of the other things that are going on. So, Travis, talk about your vaxfreedom.org program and what you're involved in there.
Yeah, Dan, I'm involved in trying to educate parents at ground zero how to be more effective and set up those around their life and their children, so trying to mandate, for example. When I get into a discussion with a professional health practitioner, and I will tell you about one of those discussions in a moment, I want these activists to go to the capitals and ask this question to their legislative officials. Here's the question. Where do you get the constitutional authority to mandate poisons to the public? No one is asking that question, and we should be. To go there and talk about the studies, this, or which ones are verified or invalid and so forth, that is a waste of time. Because it's like a court trial. You can have one expert witness in a murder trial or a professional negligence trial saying, well, the standard of care is over here. You got some other expert from Harvard saying, no. The standard of care is over here. And you have these two legal eagles and feet. My idea was to ask these professionals, these legislators, where do you get the constitutional authority to mandate poisons to the public? Well, what are you talking about? Have you seen an excipient list from the CDC yet about what's in the vaccines? And number two, even if that wasn't there, we have a system what's called limited government authority, which means power comes from the Constitution, period. Okay? If anything like that. So as citizens, we need to understand those parameters to hold them accountable in dialogue about the limitation of government and with respect to our inalienable and God-given rights. Okay? So that's the first thing. That my objective is to change the narrative. And I want the so-called activists in this movement to understand it is a more powerful question to ask than talking about the 1986 Vaccine Injury Act. And I know that's important. It's all important, but you got to start at the root of the problem of this tree. Where do you get the constitutional authority to mandate poison to the public and let them answer that? Put them on the cross-examination, if you will. I haven't heard one attorney, one activist, or anybody ask that question in a public forum. And that's one of the ones that should be asked first.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The second question is to professional doctors who believe in vaccines, them a poison. If it is, tell me how. And if not, why not?
Can you repeat that question? You got cut off.
Okay, here's a question again to doctors and health practitioners who advocate vaccines. And the question is this. Is it possible to augment by giving them a poison? If it is possible, tell me why and how. And if it's not, why not? So I leave no parameters unchecked in this question. If they're going to promote the vaccine, they can enhance someone's immune system. Well, tell me how that is biologically. Mm-hmm. Please explain it to me. And if it can't enhance their immune system, then tell me why it can't. They will not get off the hook with me. So I approach it from what's called a cross-examination perspective, like an attorney cross-examining someone in a trial. Where is the evidence that it can enhance someone's immune system by giving them a poison? Let's say formaldehyde. Mm-hmm. Okay. How about mercury? How about antifreeze? You see where I'm going with the dialogue? There's no way out of the door with this if I'm the one asking the questions.
Well, and a good one to ask too, Travis, is ask that doctor if he will sign an agreement that if anything negative happens to you or your family after taking that vaccine, if he will be personally liable.
Excellent. Very good. Yes.
Okay. Well, Judy, you're working on the same issue.
you're correct, Dan.
Talk about it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Travis. Did I cut you off?
Yeah, I was going to echo your analysis about asking the doctor to be responsible.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I try to help the person on the other side of me see their liability. So then that overshadows any discussions about the veracity or the legitimacy of any kind of studies or whose opinion above whom. So in this scenario, I was taking my kids to see a pediatrician. They were in preschool age. They haven't had any vaccines. So he says to me, Mr. Middleton, I notice you're not doing a vaccine schedule. And I say, yeah, there's a reason why that is, doctor. You want to talk about that? He goes, okay. I said, let me ask you a question first, sir. Is it your professional medical opinion that I vaccinate my children? He goes, well, yeah, it's gonna be good for the community and good for the public health, you know, protect their health and all. I said, okay. Next question. I suppose you'd be the one giving the vaccinations. Am I right? He goes, yeah, that'd be me. I said, third and final question. Let's suppose that one of your vaccines injure my child, either mortally or otherwise, in a debilitating fashion. Can I hold your license in jeopardy for medical negligence and malpractice? Mm-hmm. He goes, no, wait a minute. I said, no, you wait a minute. You just said to me earlier that it was your medical professional opinion that I vaccinate my children. And you also said to me you'd be the one doing the vaccinating. Well, if you think for a New York second I'm going to allow you to do this to my kids, not having a liability, think again. I'm going to hold you liable for any injury or complication that you cause with your vaccines. His response was, you don't have to get them vaccinated. I mean, they're healthy children, meeting their mile markers. Keep feeding them organic foods and vitamins and minerals like you do. They'll be fine. But if you go to a third world country, I said, but I'm not going to a third world. I changed the liability. I don't give a rat's tail about the studies, what they do or don't say and show. And neither does he, because he probably hadn't read any of them. But he does care about his liability. Mm-hmm. So I advise people, when you're talking to bureaucrats about some exposure you have to, they want you to incur, always change the narrative. Try to figure out a way to talk about their liability for trying to impose something on you. The conversation usually changes that point in time. So I want to share that with you, that you I have modeled a story about the nurses that I've met also recently with respect to vaccines. I met some nurses from Cottage Hospital here in Santa Barbara about 6 months ago in a place where I work. And they range from ages anywhere from 28 to 42. It was five of them. They saw this tag around my neck. And they thought I was in the military or ex-military. I said, no, it's a medical consent to no vaccines. And when she read that, her face got a little bit concerned. I said, let me guess. You believe in vaccines because you're a nurse practitioner. And you've given them out several times. She goes, they go, well, yeah, okay. I said, I've got about 10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes to talk to you all about this. So here we go. I want to ask you all a question. A collective question. How many of you can tell me how vaccines are made? And they all had this blank look on their face. I said, okay, it's not a trick question. I really want to know. I said, don't say anything if you don't know. Just say you don't know, you don't know. He goes, well, okay, you know, we don't know. I said, okay, next question. How many of you can tell me some of the ingredients in vaccines? I got this blank look again. They couldn't tell me. And I can only imagine they've never been asked those questions before. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, let me go to something else then. Let's say I have a board-certified oncologist, immunologist, and virologist standing before me here, just three of these individuals. It's going to be your advisory panel. And we're going to do a little, what's called experiment here. But first, before we get to the advisory panel, I'm going to ask you ladies a question. How many of you know what formaldehyde is? And they all, you know, yeah, I know what that is. It's a mommy fluid. I say, fine, just build that for a second. Now, you know what antifreeze is? One of them goes, is that the stuff you put in your cars for? I said, yeah, to keep the car from overheating or from freezing in wintertime. Do you know what fingernail polish remover is? He goes, yeah, we know what that is too. It's acetone, it's pipe cleaner. Okay, you know what mercury is? Well, I know what that is too. I said, fine, hold it right there now. Let's go back to our oncologists, immunologists, and virologists, our panel of experts. Now, here's the experiment. You have this panel of experts telling you, you're going to be fine, do this experiment. Don't worry. But here's the experiment. I want each of you to sample maybe an eighth of a teaspoon of formaldehyde in your cornflakes once a week for 6 months. Would you do it? They're like, no, I won't do that. We'll get to the whys in a minute, but okay, I won't go for the whys. Okay, next, same question. Let's put in antifreeze in your spoon versus formaldehyde. Would you do that one for 6 weeks in your meal or your mashed potatoes? He goes, no, we won't do it either. But what if these board-certified doctors with their PhDs were telling you, oh, you're going to be fine. You might get a little tummy ache here and there, but you're going to be fine. You might have a diarrhea, but you'll be fine. Would you do it then if they said it was okay? No, we still wouldn't do it. All right. Did I ask you about mercury or, you know, or pipe cleaner, acetone? No need for that? Okay, you still wouldn't do that. Okay. And they knew where I was going with my dialogue. I said, now, you just said no to three or four of these ingredients, and guess what? You'll find all three of those ingredients and more inside vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I don't want you to believe me. You have smartphones, right, ladies? All women have smartphones, okay? Let's make them work for you right now. I want you to get in your browser and type in the CDC's website called the excipient list. And they all went there. And lo and behold, the word that popped up from this list was formaldehyde. And they were horrified. Mm-hmm. I said, I understand, ladies, but I'll give you a warning, fair notice here. I've got 27 years experience in research behind the vaccine issue. I'm a little ahead of you. And I can hold a conversation with almost any doctor on this subject matter. So I'm giving it to you from a personal perspective. And so I asked the question, do you know who Dr. William Thompson is? They didn't know who he was. I said, do research about this guy. You'll be amazed at some of the things that he has admitted to. He's one of the chief doctors at the mm-hmm. CDC. But I'll leave you with that for now. Download the excipient list. And know that when you inject a child with a vaccine, you're injecting them with these poisons. Mm-hmm. Now, I have one last question for you ladies, and I want each of you to chime in when you can, in no certain order. Now, based on your education and training, I want to ask you all, is it possible to augment, i.e., enhance a person's immune system by giving them a poison? And if it's possible, tell me why that's possible. If it's not, please share with me and tell me why it's not possible. They were catatonic. They didn't know how to answer my question. Because now they realize where I go with my narrative. I made it personal to them. And they could not get out of the way of the train of the truth. I said, now, as I see, I've caused a little bit of concern in your eyes. It's shown all over your face. Now you're in a conflict as to, now that you know some of the truth, are you going to continue giving vaccines out as a nurse practitioner? Or are you going to change careers or do something different now? That choice is yours. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to be able to enlighten you a little bit about what you didn't know about vaccines. And that is why I wear this necklace, is because of the ever-changing evolution of the standard medical care that's always evolving forward to somewhere I don't like.
Well, that's so terrific. That's terrific. You're saying exactly what Dr. Thompson was talking about, and I'm very familiar with that study because I know Del Bigtree, and I've had him several times at some of our Red Pill Expo mm-hmm. events. So, yes. Yeah. Well, that's talk a little about your website, Thumper. Can we put Travis's website back up? Judy, I want to talk about contact tracing, because you brought that issue up, and there was a terrific little 7-minute video of Bill Clinton, and we all know how honest and wonderful Bill Clinton is, talking about how we need to enforce these contact tracing programs. He was speaking with your Governor Newsom at the time. I'm glad you sent that to me. I hadn't seen that video before that. Thumper, if we've got it, you might want to put that one up. But anyway, Judy, let's hear your thoughts on that.
Well, as far as trying to combat this, what I'm doing is that I'm putting together a group of people, coordinating, organizing, getting boots on the ground to go to city council meetings and just say, you know, we're not doing this. And because a lot of what Travis says, this is, it's poison. And the testing, we're not going to do the testing, because the test is completely worthless. It is based on a sequence of genetic material that, it uses a PCR test. Have you heard of the PCR test? Familiar with that?
Yes.
Okay. So the inventor of that test is Kerry Mullis, and he admitted that that is not, when he invented it, it's not a diagnostic test. And it's not to be used for infectious diseases. And so, but I think the reason the globalists want to use it, because you can manipulate the numbers really well, because you can, depends on the amplification of the cycles you use. So if you want to have a lot of positives, you increase the number of amplification, and it increases the genetic size, and vice versa. So it makes it really easy. Plus, I've heard that the test is, also could be contaminated, and also they're collecting DNA. So I will never, ever be tested. And so we're going to go to city council meetings. I'm going to talk about that. I've got a list of topics that I've asked our public speakers to talk about, to educate. We have to educate them, but we're not going to be ask permission. We're going to dictate, like Travis said, this is our right, and we're not going to do this. And it really irritates me when I hearing on mainstream media, they talk about, I think it was the World Health Organization, and he talks about the vaccinations, and he must have used the word everyone about 7 times in the matter of just a couple sentences. they really are pushing everyone. And I'm going to be really curious because I know there's a lot of us that are not going for it. And it's very disturbing when they tell us, you know, if you don't have that vaccination, you don't have the quantum tattoo, you know, you can't do your grocery shopping and this and that. So that's a real problem, you know, get your driver's license. So I'm hoping that falls in with this whole rights thing, you know, go to the store and say, look, you know, this is, you know, under section, was it 42, I have equal rights and you can't discriminate against me. So hopefully, Travis, we can use that when it comes to that point. But that's the way we're doing it right now. That's my call to action. I'm putting together a lot of public comments, and cause a lot of people, they'll speak, but they don't know what to say. So I've just been collecting all kinds of great articles and putting together lots of stuff. So we're going to also, at these, it used to be before this whole craziness started that we go to public city council meetings and people just come in and do their public comment. Well, now, for example, the Board of Supervisors, they're saying, oh, you have to turn in your public comment the night before by 5 o'clock, and we will be selective and limited as to how many. You know, when I told that to Travis, he said, no, that's not, no, you're just going to go in. And same thing with the city council meetings. I was checking Senior Allen, said, oh, you have to make by appointment. Travis said, no way, you're just going to show up. So that's what we're going to do. Pick like 4 cities in Ventura County to go. We're just going to go in and give our public comments and just demand that they have authority. Local, these are not rules. I mean, these are not laws. These are just guidelines. And this goes for these stupid reopening guidelines with social distancing and the masks. And, you know, I just sent them a letter. In fact, the city council, Peggy Hall, I don't know if you know who she is. She did a great, great video that went viral. It's you're shaking your head, so you know who she is. By the way, she's going to Sacramento tomorrow, and she's going to be speaking to a group. I'm not sure she's speaking to the senators, too. It seems to be some confusion there. But anyway, so she's got a great website. She's got a lot of good information on there. She's you know, one of my public comments will be about this illegal and invalid state of emergency that we are in, based on the information she collected. And, you know, I just found out something interesting. I was trying to think of why was Ventura County out of the whole country picked to do this contact tracing. And one of our activists, she brought up a good point, and she's probably right. You know, we have a very, very active group against 5G. It's been going on for several months. And I wouldn't be surprised if they picked us as kind of like punishment, you know, for what we're doing. So, yeah, this is a good pamphlet that Ed Griffin put together about contact tracing. So that's kind of what we're doing. We're really fighting it. We're also going to be asking to stop this craziness with the social distancing and the masks. And I'm continually sending articles to our city council and educating them because, you know, they got to understand that they do not have to follow these. These are not laws.
Well, they're not laws, Judy. And also, as elected officials, they don't have the right to tell you that you can't, that you are going to be selected if you ask the right question, or that they can limit your testimony. I mean, they honestly don't have the right to do that.
No. We have public access under, I think.
Oh, the Brown Act.
Yeah, the Brown Act, or the California Constitution, right?
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Hey, Judy?
Yes.
There is a question out in chat. Ricky Roche was asking, what does she mean by contaminated test? Some people think the tests are contaminated, but the test is a swab. Okay.
I, whether there could be, I don't know. I'm just guessing. I was thinking maybe there's something on the swab before they put it in. I mean, I just heard it was, they were, some were contaminated, and I'm sorry, I don't have anything to back it up.
No, okay. Yeah. Just one of our, that's the unique thing about Patriot Soapbox. We have a chat and they like to ask questions and when we have people on.
Right, right. I'd like to just make a comment. This comes from David Icke's, one of his talks, about this, it kind of doesn't exactly relate to contact tracing, but it's social distancing and the mask and everything. And the plan to erase human interaction, I think, is an important concept to bring up. You know, they're preparing us to fuse with machines. And this is relevant to the vaccines. They want machine to human relationship instead of human to human relationship. And it's all this psychological game. In fact, this whole thing is nothing but a psyop, as you all know. They like personal assistance. They like the self-driving cars, these interactive dolls that the kids are playing with. And so that they're interacting with machinery as if they were human. And so before you have a physical fusion, you have to have a psychological fusion, because as you know, transhumanism is a big part of this. And these young kids, you know, they're, primary, when you think about it, the primary relationship is with the phone, you know, not people. It's creating this addiction. And now with this lockdown, humans are being pushed apart, and they're told basically that we should fear each other. And the underlying theme is this, you know, the climate cult, with this hoax of human causing climate change. So now humans, you know, humans are dangerous with the climate, but now with this lockdown and this quote virus, the social distancing, now humans are dangerous in that respect too. So there's, so it's there, this, all this social distancing and this mask, it's not to protect from any virus, because they know there's no virus, it's to keep people apart. And if any of you know Dr. Kaufman, Andrew Kaufman is a great source, by the way, for people to look up. So these holes in the mass are so big, if there really were a virus, it's like holding back a wave of water with a sieve. So what does the mask do? He said, what does the mask do? He says, it keeps us from communicating. I mean, there's no expression. There's no human interaction. And I just sent out a great piece last night, and it's called, I have a big list of, you know, contacts that I send things out. And it's called The Face Mask, a Powerful Symbol of COVID Oppression. And he brings out the point that the globalists are profiting from this crisis, that they saw an opportunity. You know, they, I don't know if you know, at the beginning with this whole crisis, they were saying that the WHO was saying the mask doesn't help. And then a month later said, no, you need to wear the mask. And then, no, they were like back and forth. Until the last thing they realized, hey, we can really make this an opportunity. We can use the mask to instrumentalize, to create a social climate. Let's keep the fear, the anxiety, and paranoia going. And having these masks to be constantly reminded that things are not going back to normal. And, you know, it's really social engineering. It's a great tool. And so what... he was saying that it's a perfect tool. It is suppressive. And he says, you don't need to be a Robert Langdon from Da Vinci Code to figure out that it is a powerful symbol. It's a startling sight. It affects everybody on a visceral level because it triggers our deeply rooted fears of illness and death, and unconsciously raises our brain stress and anxiety levels while alerting us of an impending danger. Each masked face is a reminder that things are not normal and that we should be afraid, and we are looking for outside forces to save us. And he says, on a human level, the mask dehumanizes the people. I mean, how can you relate to anybody? You can't even tell if they're smiling or not. How can you connect with them if you can only communicate with muffled words through a piece of cloth? And the mask, what the mask says is, stay away from me. I don't trust you. So the specific social climate, this is gold for these social engineers. It profoundly alters society when you think about it. The society is totally subjected to fear, panic. They become irrational, and they readily accepts any measure that promises some kind of safety. And this is exactly what's happening right now. And I thought that was very, very well said. I mean, these people are just walking around like zombies, and you just want to shake them, you know? And the globalists know that, but the people are not aware that it makes it so easy for them to manipulate us. So I read someplace that knowledge of forearmed, you know, it really knowledge is power. And so that's what we've got to know, because the only way that they know that this will work is the majority is unaware of their ultimate game plan. So that's why, I mean, we just got an email today from a friend, an old fraternity brother, my husband's, who doesn't want to, you know, make enemies out of him. But, and I'm sure he is very typical. I mean, he is fixated on these numbers that the mainstream press, he's just like, oh, all these people are dying, you know. I mean, it's sad. And this really is.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. And Judy, yeah. I don't know. You mentioned the numbers in your county. In the state of Montana, they've had 16 deaths that they've attributed to the coronavirus. And you know that if they've attributed 16 of them, because there's federal money involved, probably the real numbers are half that. They've literally shut down our entire state, shut down our entire economy. And this is the sort of thing that's been happening nationwide. There's a few states like that stand out, like Illinois, New York, Washington, that have had a number of deaths attributed to the coronavirus. But the truth is, most of the states have got very low numbers. It isn't even close to what seasonal flu is. Yet now we hear the term, we better get ready for the new norm. Well, if this is the new normal, we've got a problem. I can see Travis. Travis is just absolutely jumping to talk about that.
Okay, go ahead, Travis. Go ahead.
No, I said months ago to people around me, as you know, just a shelter and do the opposite.
We missed a lot of
because
that.
You're hiding stuff, and I know the truth will come. To do the opposite is the thing. I told people, if the government wants us to shelter in, do the opposite. Go out and do
stuff. Yes.
They want you to use social distancing, then do the opposite. Go up and hug people, shake their hands, you know, because it's a total scam. My other statement was that our government lied to us about so many events.
You got cut off.
Tuskegee, 9/11, shot done, shoot the plane. I said, what makes you think they're telling the truth about the coronavirus? They're not. It's just another ploy for social engineering. There's nothing to fear but fear itself. So go out and live your normal life and don't do all this social distancing and sheltering in. I didn't do any of that nonsense. You know?
I agree. I haven't either. And people get irked by the fact that I refuse to wear this stupid mask and some of this other crap. It's just crazy.
No,
yeah. I was told someone said to me, well, I wear the mask to make others feel comfortable. I don't give a rat's tail about other people's comfortability.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peggy brought up a really good point about the mask. So that's a medical intervention item, and it really needs, you know, and so she's got a way to. I just sent a letter to the city council that talks about reopening without legal restrictions whatsoever. And she talks about how the mask is medical intervention, which inhibits the function of your respiratory system. In other words, you know, staying alive. And unless they provide, you go into a business and say, okay, you provide me a licensed medical doctor who will perform a physical examination, you know, to engage in this health intervention. So the public health, she says, is not confirmed any findings about masks, forced separation, asymptomatic transmission, that the CDC guidelines are based on science or medical evidence. Even the CDC guidelines are based on inconclusive, weak assumptions with no reputable peer-reviewed science studies. So, you know,
all you need is to go out and get the OSHA requirements for spray painting and the wearing of respirators.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Let's go get the OSHA requirements, and that'll solve the whole problem. Okay. I used to do respirator fitting for the Blue Angels. Okay. And we paint lots of nasty paint on those blue jets. And, end of story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well,
New York City. Go ahead. In New York City, before this whole crazy thing happened, the New York City Paint Union, they would have to, the employees would have to have a cardiologist do a medical examination before these painters could wear masks. So, and now everybody just wears them. So, like, I guess the government is now medical, anyway.
Well, they're going to make everybody shave their beards off, too. You cannot wear a respirator with a beard because you don't have a seal. And if you want to be, this paper mask is a freaking joke.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it. Yeah. No question about it. Well, we're going to run out of time here. I want to make sure we get a really good chance to talk about some of these plans like ID 2020. Using the vaccine regimen to get hydrogel into the human body so that they can use AI and all these other things. Let's talk about that. And Travis, I'm sorry, but you've been having, we've been having trouble with your Zoom connection. So I'd like to give you the chance to say something first, and we'll see how it comes through.
Okay. I haven't heard about this program yet in terms of that particular application, but I'm never going to get an injection. I'm never going to apply for to get anything where I got to get an injection. You can't go shop, or if you don't get your certification that you've had this medical procedure done, you can't get a car or buy certain things. I'll have to cross that bridge when I get there. But I haven't heard about this yet. Like the Real ID of California, it's a scam too. I've researched that and turns out it's another scam. I don't have time to go into it right now, but it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, Travis, I'll invite you to come to Montana if things get really bad. You'd make a great citizen, no question about it. All right, Judy, go ahead, please.
Okay, I've got some information on that hydrogel and actually all the ingredients for the vaccine. This information came from a whistleblower that worked with FEMA. You may have heard of her. She was making the rounds. Celeste, I think her first name is.
Oh, yeah, she's been on my show.
No way. Yeah. Has she? Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, she said, you want me to repeat what the four ingredients are?
Yes, because I haven't heard of Celeste.
She said? Oh, okay. All right, so one is aborted baby stem cells. Mm-hmm. Second one is humanized mice, which has human blood, human organs, human immune system. It's like a human in a mouse suit. Number three, take human protein and inject into the human DNA into the plant's vascular system, and it humanizes the plants. And it says that it, quote, will protect against COVID-19, end quote, which doesn't exist. It's just a ruse to get people to take the vaccine. She said the worst is the DARPA hydrogel sensor. It's nanoparticles in a gelatin form, and it's put into the skin by injection. Once inside, it starts to assemble and it grows. It grows where it's injected and fuses to our own tissues. It fuses to your ligaments, bones, and cells. It's not like a microchip. It can't be taken out. It becomes one of you and grows. The worst, you become one of AI, an Internet of Things, become like your own PC interface. It's one with the Hive system. We've all heard of that. Everyone will have to have, will alert the official that you're sick before you know it. You know, that's the Hive. Of course, it's for surveillance, what you eat, what supplements you're taking, you know, and that's just an incentive to promote it. So they said to get back to normal, it's a lie. Most people will buy. So anyway, that's a detailed description of what's in it. Doesn't sound real good to me.
I can't imagine anybody putting anything into their body that you know so little about. Travis, I want to give you a chance.
I think that what'll happen is what they'll do. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about your website and about the lawsuit. Thumper, would you put the information up on how people can donate to support this lawsuit as well?
I'll get it up there.
Okay, go ahead. Travis, please. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
Oh, that's okay. I didn't hear what you said anyway. I wanted to make a statement about that other program, about this implementation of this artificial intelligence in your skin. They will probably try to do this under anesthesia while you're in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the first thing. So beware of going to hospitals alone. All right. So now back to my website. Currently, there is no lawsuit that we're doing at SB 277 with the vaccine issue at this time. What I am doing is trying to help understand how to interact with public school systems and the public health officials with a medical power of attorney through the parent patriot doctrine. And so you can find the document on my website. Yes, I would like some funding to keep me able to do research and dig deeper and support my efforts.
Well, I put that in there, Travis, for our appellate review.
For our lawsuit, yes, yours and mine. That's, okay, different lawsuit. Okay, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, for our lawsuit. Yes. That's what that was for.
Okay, great. Right. And yes, I would need funding for that lawsuit also to go to the next level. So,
you said there were like several documents.
I'm sorry? Okay. Judy, what were you saying?
Were several documents. Yeah, there were several documents that are going to be involved in that loss in the appellate review. And so that's why we needed money.
Correct. Yes, several documents involved. The opening appellate brief, the reply brief, and the respondent brief, and all that good stuff. Yes. Filing fees, all that stuff goes into filing an appeal. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just in case we have to go there, I'd like to have funding to be able to take it all the way.
Yes.
Travis, I'd love to see you in court, Travis. I really would. It's refreshing to see someone who is a non-attorney that has such a clear understanding of just how bad the legal profession and the judicial system is.
It's another fraud. It's a total fraud. They don't. The system doesn't really care about the rights of citizens and litigants. It's about keeping the status quo, and you have to know the lies and tricks before you enter the venue to know how to overcome them when they start throwing them at you. So that's what my mentors have taught me. Understand, when you go into court, the judge is your enemy. The opposing attorney is your enemy spy. The law is a weapon, and the courtroom is a battleground. And they both work tandem against you to ruin your case if you let them. but you have to know the rules of engagement before you learn how to figure out how they're cheating you. This is in the criminal process. It's also in the civil process. It's just the way things are.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good. Thumper, I see that you've got that website up. Thank you for doing that. Judy, is there any follow-up that you would like to say? We're almost out of time. Give you just a minute or so.
Yeah, just a final comment on the overall agenda of what they want to do. This came from Corbett Report. He was saying how this, quote, coronavirus is just another stepping stone to global governance. And what they're doing to the U.S. right now is just like John Perkins' book. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Great book.
Yes.
Yes, what the IMF is doing, what they're doing to the third world is basically what they're doing to us. They're going to make us debt slaves, shut down the world. They want the central bank to implode. Strengthen the World Health Organization so they can implement the World Health regulations from the top to bottom. And really the cornerstone of this whole thing is the vaccine. So, there was an excellent video by Ashley, and it's about the global, if you can see this, that's global mafia, the global medical mafia. All these organizations that they're all connected. It's the pandemic racket, and all the same people, are involved in all of them. And so that's just a big con game. So I just wanted to mention that. So yeah, that's basically, we just have to fight back. And that's what I'm doing. I'm just doing my best to fight back.
Well, God bless you both. God bless you both for doing that on behalf of the citizens in your area. People, learn more about HR 6666. It's very appropriately named. It is going to determine the future of your privacy. And I think they've probably got things like that planned pretty much all over the country. I'm sure that California is always the first to try any of these new experiments in controlling the people. And I'm grateful that you guys would be here and be part of this program. And thank you very so much. And I want to thank our listeners for being part of our program and for helping us to connect the dots. I'll look forward to the next time we get a chance to visit with you folks. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Dan.
All righty. Very much. Thumper, is Patrick ready to go?
It looks like Patrick's ready and Pam's standing by. So, Dan,
alrighty.
We'll talk to you later. Good show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Patrick. Have a great program.
And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means for expanding its sphere of influence.
It was 1776 when the founders signed the writ of independence from the Brits. It was revolution. Now an enemy from within would enslave us all again and deprive us of our rights in the Constitution. Restore the Republic. Wake up, it's time to understand. Restore the Republic. Lose